We're going back to Romans 12. We've been there a couple times. We're going to go back and finish that list. Hey, this Sunday, I'm going to do part two of the Giants message. We're going to take those four giants that David had to face in his old age, and we're going to talk about the meaning of their names, because that represents giants that we have to face most often the older we get. And it might surprise you what giants, particularly older people, have to face. Might not be a giant like Goliath, but these other giants are much more subtle, and we're going to talk about that. And then the third message, which will be the last Sunday this month, since I'm not preaching on the 21st, somebody else is preaching that Sunday. I don't know who that is. You don't know who it is either, do you? You're going to find out. But the last Sunday of the month, I'm going to finish up the series and preach on the weapons that God has given us to defeat the giants in our life. And all of them are found in the story of David and Goliath and these other giants. So we'll talk about that as we go. Romans 12, verses 6 to 8. Since we have gifts that differ according to the grace given to us, let us use them properly. If prophecy, in proportion to one's faith; if service, in the act of serving; or the one who teaches, the act of teaching; or the one who exhorts, in the work of exhortation; the one who gives with generosity; the one who is in leadership with diligence; the one who shows mercy with cheerfulness. And that's Paul's words to us as believers. We call these the motivational gifts. There are seven listed: prophecy, serving, teaching, exhortation, giving, ruling or leading or administration. Any one of those three words would be proper. And then the gift of mercy. And as I've shared with you before, every believer has one of those gifts as your primary motivational gift. Now, you may have more gifts, and we'll talk about how that works in a couple of weeks. But you have as your basic motivational, primary, passionate gift from God, one of those seven gifts. And he commands us here to use them properly, to be able to use them in a proper way that will bring God glory, bless his church, and in turn will be a blessing to you. Well, tonight we're going to talk about the last of those seven gifts. We've talked about prophecy, serving, teaching, exhortation. And if you didn't get the notes on those, I think there are some still back there in the back. If not, if you'll let me know, I'll get some more run for next week. But tonight we're going to deal with the gift of giving, the gift of administration, and the gift of mercy. So here we go. I hope you're ready. Number one, the gift of giving. As introduction, I would say, because giving and sharing is so much to be a part of the life of a Christian, it's really hard for us to understand how some can be given the spiritual gift of giving. But it is true. There are those whose primary spiritual gift is that of giving. And before I go any further with this, let me say, most of the time when you say giving, you think of money. And I've known a lot of people who had the gift of giving that would say, I don't have a lot of money to give away. Well, money can be a part of giving, but folks, you can give a whole lot more than just money with the spirit of giving, spiritual gift of giving. It might be given of your time. It might be given of your knowledge. It might be given. We had a lady that lived next door to us. It's a bad place for a lady to be living next door to a Baptist preacher when she's as good of a cook as she was. But Miss Freddie used to make cakes. Anybody in the church, or really in the community, who was sick, anybody who had a death, anybody who was just in need, Miss Freddie would give cakes. She'd cook cakes and give them away. I like to know how many cakes that woman gave away over her years. That was her gift. It was from a heart of giving that she prepared work and gave that. So giving moves beyond just money. Paul does list a spiritual gift, the gift of giving, here in Romans 12. Here's the definition. The gift of giving is the capacity to give liberally, to meet the needs of others, and yet to do so with a purity of motive which senses that the giving is a simple sharing of that which God has provided. The one who has the gift of giving donates generously to others out of their own resources, and they do so cheerfully because it is a gift and not a duty. If you want a biblical example of a person with a gift of spiritual gift of giving, go to Matthew in the New Testament and look at his life. Now, Matthew was a tax collector, but that's not the reason he was a giver. Don't you wish tax gatherers, tax collectors were givers? They're takers most of the time, not givers. But Matthew generally, he demonstrates one. And again, I'll use my analogy of a church. Out of 100 people, I would say only a very small percentage of people in a church of 100 would have the true gift of giving. Now, here's some indications of such a person. A person with the gift of giving has a keen ability to discern wise investments in order to have more money available to give away. Now, I'm going to stop right there at this one. I'm not going to use the man's name because some of you may know him, and I would not, he wouldn't mind me telling his story. He would not want me using his name. But there was a man in one church that I pastored that for a long, long time, he failed at everything he did. And every business encounter that he had, and every time he tried to make a living for him and his family, he just got in trouble. But over a period of time, God began to give him some discernment about making wise investments. And this guy, everything he touches and has touched the last 25 years turns to money. I mean, we're not talking a few dollars. I mean, we're talking big time bucks. I remember the first time as his pastor, he came and brought me his tithe check. Now, he didn't bring it to me to impress me. In fact, he brought it to me and he said, "Preacher, here, I want you to know what I'm giving for one simple reason. I want you to hold me accountable to God for me giving properly to God. So I'm going to submit to you." I have to tell you what, I had never seen that many zeros on a check before. I mean, it was a heap of them. And you know what? He loved to give. And I remember through a little time of down in his business, I literally saw the man weep because he did not have as much money to give as he usually had. Hey, God blessed him so that he could be a blessing to others, and he understood that. He was the most generous man. In fact, not only did he tithe to his church, he gave that and above that to other ministries and to needs along the way. But a person with the gift of giving, they've just got the keen ability to discern wise investments. Here are some other things. They have a desire to give quietly without public notice. They're usually the type of person who wants to give behind the scenes. But what a blessing I've had over the years to see people who had such a gift that would come up and make a gift for something and say, "Preacher, I don't want people knowing who gave this. I want to give it. I want to be a blessing, but I don't want anybody knowing who gave it to them." Their motivation is to give as unto the Lord at his promptings and not at man's appeal. The person with the gift of giving has a desire to give gifts which are of high quality and will meet needs. They have the ability to test faithfulness and wisdom by how people handle funds. And by the way, from a biblical perspective, one of the best ways you can tell about a person's walk with God is how they handle money. Jesus talked about money almost more than any other subject that he talked about. And almost in every case when he discussed money, he talked about it being an indication of the faithfulness of a person's relationship with God. They have the tendency to practice personal thriftiness, and they are generally content with the basic necessities of life. A person with the gift of giving has an alertness to see what other people do with their money. They have an ability to see financial needs which others tend to overlook. They often have a strong desire to use money as a way to motivate others to give. They have a desire to share everything they have with others, both spiritually and physically. I'll go back to that last one I shared. There was a man in our church in Valdosta that was quite wealthy. We were building a 32,000 square foot family life educational building. This has been 25 years ago, and we were spending $2.8 million. That's a lot of money. And we were raising that money. And this particular gentleman, I don't remember the figure that he gave, but it was close to $1 million. But when he gave it, he said, "Hey, Ken, how about use this? Don't tell, I don't want anybody to know who gave it." And by the way, most people knew who gave it, but he said, I don't want you to say who gave it. I don't want people to know who gave it, but use this to motivate other people to give. In other words, tell them if they give X amount of dollars, it can get matched. And you know what? It worked. We didn't raise the entire amount, but it helped along the way. That was his heart. This person will share that which of that, let me try that again. This person will share that which they possess. They do not worry about what they do not have, but shares from what they do have. Person with the gift of giving has a desire to give where it counts the most. The person with the gift of giving has joy when their gift is an answer to specific prayer. They have a dependency on their partner's counsel, their spouse, to confirm an amount of a gift. They often have that dependency. And then they have a desire to feel a part of the work and the ministry to which they are giving. Now, here are some dangers and misunderstandings about a person with the spiritual gift of giving. A person with the gift of giving may be so concerned about giving to others that they give sparingly to their own family. Don't mean they will. It's a danger. They have the tendency to listen to unscriptural counsel on money management. Sometimes they tend to put pressure on people who have less to give. They have to be careful in discerning God's promptings about a gift. They sometimes judge those who misuse funds rather than advising them. Some people with this gift will try to control people or ministries by their gifts. Oh, boy. Again, I've had that one in churches too. Somebody comes in with a large gift and they want to give it and say, "Let me tell you what I want you to do with my money." We had a man that wanted to offer a large gift to a building fund and wanted us to put the name of a family member on the building we were building. And he wasn't going to give the money unless we did that. Our bylaws said we couldn't take money. We didn't do anything in that church where we put it in memorial of someone. I had to tell him no. That's hard to do. He wanted to give $500,000. I had to tell him no. He thought I was crazy. I thought I was crazy. But I couldn't take it. But he wanted to control what we did with his money. Hey, folks, listen to me. When you give your money to the Lord, it's the Lord's money. And when you give your money through the church, it's the Lord's money. Okay? And you know, you can use it to help motivate other people to give. But when you give it, it belongs to the Lord. They can corrupt people by giving too much. By the way, parents who have one or more, I mean, usually it's not both parents, usually it's one or the other who has the gift of giving, you better be careful with that within raising your children. You can find yourself giving them so much, you give them too much. Amen or me? That wasn't very exciting. Y'all didn't get in. People with the gift of giving need to be careful not to invest in projects which do not benefit the lives of people. The lack of response to pressure appeals may appear as a lack of generosity on their part. In other words, they don't like high pressure. And then lastly, I would say they can appear very materialistic because of their emphasis on money. And that's certainly not true of everyone who has giving, but the gift of giving, but it can be true of some. The use of the gift, be careful about showing off in the use of your gift, particularly if God blesses you with abundance. And then I would say, be careful of exaggerating what you have. Now, if you want a good example of that, and if you want that a warning, just go to Acts 5, 1 through 5 and read about what happened to somebody who exaggerated their gift. Anybody know what's in Acts 5? Ananias and Sapphira. You remember what they did? They exaggerated about what they gave to the church. You know what happened to them? They dropped dead. God took them out. Word of warning, gift of giving. Gift of administration. It appears eight times, the word does, or the gift, the usage of it, eight times in the New Testament. Definition, the gift of administration involves the capacity to manage details of the service functions within a local church. It is the special ability that makes a person take the place of leadership in a group and give guidance to the group. It is the motivation to coordinate the activities of others for the advancement of common goals. The gift of administration, I love this. I don't know where I got this definition from, but it's simple, but it's right on target. The gift of administration is the spiritual ability to organize. The gift is also referred to as the gift of ruling, the gift of leading. Now, I cannot myself think of a New Testament example. I'm sure there's some there. Maybe I've just overlooked. But if you want to see a perfect example of a person who has the spiritual gift of administration, go to the book of Nehemiah. By the way, people used to think Nehemiah was the shortest man in the Bible. Nehemiah. Scholars have found out that Nehemiah was not the shortest man. Bildad the Shuhite was actually the shortest man. Y'all can think about that one later when you don't have anything else to think about. Here's some indications of the gift of administration. Person with the gift of administration has a unique ability to see the overall needs of a church and to clarify long-range goals. They have a motivation to organize that for which they are responsible. They have a desire to complete a task as soon as possible. They have an awareness of the resources available to them to complete the task. A person with this gift has the ability to know what can and cannot be delegated. They have the tendency to assume responsibility if no leadership exists. They have fulfillment in seeing all the pieces come together and others enjoying the finished product. They have the desire to move on to a new challenge when a previous task is fully completed. A person with the gift of administration thinks in terms of helping others reach goals. They also have a concern for the good of the whole group when they are in charge of the group. They see the need of and for organization as the primary need for the church to do its job in a proper manner. They can take orders from those over them and do so until called to take the lead. In fact, a person, and this may sound like it wouldn't go hand in hand, but it does, a person with the gift of administration will often stand on the sidelines until they're called upon to lead. They generally can take criticism, both good and bad, in the right way. They have the ability to break down major goals in smaller, achievable tasks. They have a need for loyalty and confidence for those who are being directed and served, and they have the ability to inspire and encourage workers by their own cheerfulness, approval, praise, and challenges. And let me just say tonight, there has to be those in leadership in the local church with the gift of administration. Now, you don't want a lot of them. What happens in some churches, we have, what's the old saying? We have too many chiefs and not enough Indians. If you don't have the Indians at work, you're not going to accomplish anything. I don't care how many chiefs you got. But somebody better be the chief. Somebody better be in charge. And when you've got a man or a woman who has the gift, the spiritual gift of administration that uses that in a godly way for the good of the church, boy, what a blessing they are to the church. I'm going to tell y'all something. He's not in here tonight, so I'm going to brag on him for just a minute. You as a church, you don't realize, or maybe you do realize by now, you don't realize what a blessing it is for you to have Richard Brown on your staff. In fact, I know firsthand because I served with the man for years. I don't know of a better administrator anywhere than Richard Brown. I've watched him. He does stuff behind the scenes that most of you would never even dare to think about, but he does it for the good of this church to move forward towards the task of reaching this community with the gospel of Jesus. And I know the churches that he's gone to. I was so mad at Frank Cox at North Metro when he stole Frank from me, stole Richard from me down in Valdosta. I could have slapped Frank if I could have found him. But I'd had to repent if I'd done that, so I didn't do that. I went to school with Frank, and I was mad at Frank when I found out he was getting Richard. But that's the type of churches that Richard has served. And he is. He has a heart. And if you've ever put him in charge of a task, you will know that. Well, here are some dangers and misunderstandings about administration. The ability to delegate responsibility may appear as laziness to avoiding work. Oh, me. You know, it's funny how, and in pastoring a church, you have to have, to some degree, even though it's not your primary gift, you have to be able to function in administration in some capacity, particularly if it's a larger church. And I don't know how many times over the years I got accused of being lazy because I delegated a responsibility. Now let me chase a rabbit tonight. Maybe this will be helpful to you in getting a new pastor. Can I tell you tonight, though, I know pastors have to wear many hats, and they have a lot of responsibilities. But let me tell you what, the number one primary responsibility of a pastor is one thing and one thing only. And if he fails as a pastor. And if a church fails to let him do this thing, it fails as a church. It's not going to the hospital to hold your hand. It's not coming to your house to have a cup of coffee with you. It is not to do a lot of the things that people think preachers ought to do. It's to preach the word. And if you don't give him the freedom to do that, and it takes time. You don't just come up with strong biblical messages sitting down, I hope he doesn't, with a computer and pull up AI. You got to dig it in your heart, your soul, your mind, your whole being. And folks, let me tell you something. Just because, a pastor cannot do it all. Don't expect him to do it all. Let him preach first and foremost. He's got a staff here. That's why you hired staff to help him. He's got deacons here. That's why deacons are supposed to deek. Deacons are not church bosses. Deacons help serve the pastor, serve the church. And churches that get that right are blessed. And by the way, they're the ones growing. You get these churches that think deacons are for your board of directors to tell the preacher what to do. Let me tell you what, you might as well write Ichabod on that church. I can take you to many of them. Why did I go off on that? I got y'all upset last week preaching something. I didn't mean to do that. Tell it like it is. Well, there it is. Dangers and misunderstandings. Their willingness to endure reaction from others may appear as callousness. A person with a gift of administration usually doesn't really give a rip what you think. That's the only way I can interpret that. He knows what God's put on his heart, and he's going to move that way. And hey, you can either join or not join. You can be upset about it or not upset. It's not going to change what he knows God has led them to him to do or her. The viewing of people as resources may appear that projects are more important than people. The desire to complete tasks swiftly may appear as insensitivity to schedule, weariness, and priorities of other workers. The person with this gift sometimes fails to explain why things must be done. They assume others see the need as they do. Because of their involvement in administrating the church, they sometimes neglect and fail to lead their own homes. There may be a tendency to show favoritism towards those who appear to be more loyal. They may take charge of projects which are not in God's direction. They have the danger of delegating too much work to others, and they may be unresponsive to suggestions and appeals from others. Those are just some dangers. But thank God for those in the church that have the gift of administration that can help the church move forward and move smoothly towards accomplishing what God's called it to. Now, here's the gift of mercy. We'll finish with it tonight. And by the way, next week, what I'm going to do, I'm going to give you some more general, I'm going to review what we've done. I'm going to give you some more general principles about spiritual gifts, and then we're going to look at the ministry gifts and the manifestational gifts, not to this detail. I'm going to give you a definition of each one of those and talk about how they function in the church so that you can see how all the gifts work in the church. The gift of mercy, it appears, mercy, the word and the usage, it appears 59 times in the New Testament in one form or the other. The gift of mercy refers to the capacity both to feel sympathy with those in need and to manifest this sympathy in some practical, helpful way with a cheerful spirit so as to encourage and help those that are in need. Mercy is the unique and appropriate action of love towards those in special need. It is the motivation to identify with and comfort those who are in distress. John in the New Testament, the Apostle John, is a great biblical example of a person who has the gift of the gift of mercy. I would say that in a church running 100, probably 30% of the church has the gift of mercy. You need a bunch of folks who have the gift of mercy. So think about that. 70%, give or take a few, 70% of people in the church running 100 people, has either the gift of serving or the gift of mercy. And that would probably be true of those here tonight. Those are the two greatest needs in the church, serving and mercy. Here are some indications. Person with the gift of mercy has the ability to feel an atmosphere of joy or distress in an individual or group. This is the type of person that can walk up, look at somebody and go, what's going on with you? Something's bothering you. Now, how do they know that? They just have the ability to be able to discern such. They have an attraction to and understanding of people who are in distress. A person with a gift of mercy has a desire to remove hurts and help bring healing to others. They avoid being firm unless they see how it will bring benefit. And parents with the gift of mercy, this is a danger for you in raising kids. Many times, parents with the gift of mercy don't discipline their children like they should because they don't want to hurt feelings. They want to alleviate hurt instead of letting a child learn their lesson. And you've got to balance that. A person with the gift of mercy has sensitivity to words and actions which will hurt others. Robin has the gift of mercy. It's uncanny, and this doesn't happen all the time, but almost all the time. If one in a marriage relationship has the gift of prophecy, the other has the gift of mercy. And that's needed to balance them. And I'm just blunt. You don't have to worry about what I'm thinking. You don't have to worry about if I've got something to say to you, I'm going to say it. And I really don't care how it hurts your, I won't say I don't care. I don't think about how it's going to hurt your feelings. And I don't know how many times I've said something that I was right in what I said, but wrong in how I said it. Y'all understand? And my wife has said, Ken, you didn't say that in the right way. To which I would say, yes, I did. No, you know what? She's usually right. Because she has a deeper sensitivity to those things because she has the gift of mercy. And raising my boys, you could go ask them. Buddy, I was tough on them. I didn't kill them, either one. Thought about it a couple times along the way. But I'm glad I let them live. But sometimes I was too tough. They needed discipline. They probably needed whatever punishment came their way. But they didn't need their dad to be as rough on them as I was. And Robin, in her sweet way, could correct me. Take me a little while to get over it. But realize she's right. And I'd have to go deal with it. But thank God for that balance. And so it is in relationships. A person with the gift of mercy has sensitivity to words and actions that will hurt others. They have the ability to discern sincere motives in other people. They tend to close their spirits to those who are insincere and insensitive. They have a deep desire to give appropriate help to those who are in need and need it the most. A person with this gift has the ability to make the needy comfortable and accepted. They generally have unusual patience. That's when I knew it wasn't me. They have a need for deep friendships in which there is mutual commitment. They have a need to measure acceptance by physical closeness and quality time together. A person with the gift of mercy has the desire to remove the causes of hurts rather than to look for the benefits from them. And there is a tendency for the person with the gift of mercy to be attracted to a person with the gift of prophecy. Only God could orchestrate that. Thank God for that, though. Dangers and misunderstandings, I'll do it quick. At times, they can fail to be firm and decisive. They tend to take up offenses for those who have been hurt. A person with the gift of mercy tends to have to base decisions on emotions rather than on reason. They possibly promote improper affections from those of the opposite sex just because of the way they empathize towards others. They tend to cut off fellowship with those who are insensitive to others. Because of their desire to remove hurt and suffering, they sometimes get in God's way in allowing people to suffer. Boy, that's a danger. They have the danger of sympathizing with those who are violating God's standards. Again, a danger. And because of their desire for friendship, they risk establishing possessive friendships with other people. Those are just some of the indications. All seven motivational gifts, you've got one of them. I'm gonna wrap up these seven motivational ones next week with a couple of things again, and then we'll move on. But I hope you'll chew on that, pray through it, see what's true in your life, and see if God doesn't help you understand where you're gifted in those areas. Father, thank you for tonight. Thank you for our time together. Thank you for each person that's here. What a blessing it is to be able to come out in the middle of the week like this and to fellowship and to learn. And Lord, help us to better see how you have given us so that we are not ignorant about the spiritual gifts that you have given us. Bless us as we leave this evening, and we'll be careful to give you the praise and the glory for it in Jesus' name. Amen. All right. God bless you. Good to see you tonight. That's a good group tonight.